take your hands off that mute button, because the Lotus Effect is coming up right fucking now!
This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right. Like, we know what the fuck we're talking about. Anyway, welcome to episode 219 of The Lotus Effect, which this week we've provisionally titled Shithead Season.
Because Shithead Season has officially
cut
begun.
Cut season, Shithead Season, Cuthead Season, shit, anyway.
Oh my god, the old Daffy and yes. Bugs routine.
I'm gonna have to write Cunthead Season down as a show title.
That's worthy.
Yeah, because it is.
I think it would be Cunt Muffin though.
Cunt Muffin. Well, it might be. I don't know. Anyway, as you can tell, we just make this shit up as we go. And you know what? If I can actually be to the correct spot in my soundboard, I can play the clip that goes with me. I'm Phone Boy.
Would you like to swing on a star?
Okay, I have to tell a story about this one because so we were looking for, as we do before the, you know, on Saturdays when we're putting the show together or we're doing the clips or whatever, we were trying to figure out some clips, that opening clips that were related to our weigh-in topic of aliens, because it's not one we normally cover, and I happened to type in this phrase, out of this world, and up pops this sitcom that neither one of us had seen since the 80s, because I think that's when it was on, right?
But the funny part being, when I heard him playing that song, I spun my head around and I'm like, why are you playing the theme song Out of This World?
Yes, well, that's why, because I'm using it as the opening clip here. So, yeah, which is a Frank Sinatra song, actually, if you get it right. But, yeah, this was the plot of this sitcom was some aliens had come down and are living, I don't know, living in a, you know, in a typical sitcom family on Earth. You know, they're like the daughter is, you know, like pretend to be human, but she's an alien or something. You know, there's other people, other aliens. And, you know, I don't know. It's an 80s sitcom.
It was a lot of fun. It had a great soundtrack. And, you know, after all that fapping about, I'm still Phoenix.
They're beautiful, aren't they? Stars. I mean, I never look at them anymore, but they actually are quite beautiful.
Yeah, that, when we took that clip, yeah, that was...
It touched him, and it touched me, because when you think about it, how many of us actually stop to take the opportunity to look up and appreciate the stars and the beauty that is all around us. The beauty of doing things like welcoming our Apple and Spotify, or Apple Podcasts.
How
and Spotify
the hell
listeners.
You're listening to this podcast, right? Well, join us. You know, we love you. We're glad you're part of this fever dream that we call the Lotus Effect.
You know, I think, sweetheart, you might be freaking out.
Just a little.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Look, not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs. They are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, well, with everything that's going on lately, it does feel a little like Willy Wonka doing the freak out scene, right? I mean, it's been with everything. I don't know. Just...
Yeah, but the original Willy Wonka freak out scene is totally awesome. And if you've never done it on acid, don't.
Yeah, exactly. I've never done it on acid. I probably won't, you know, but we do that. Some movie.
I haven't done it on acid either. I don't need acid for that thing to fuck with my head.
No, that movie was something else. But yeah, if you're gonna watch Willy Wonka, yeah, you need to watch the Gene Wilder version.
And may he rest in peace, because Willy Wonka could only be one man.
Yeah. Well, with that, the Lotus is affecting shit's all emotional tonight. However, it's affecting you. We want to hear about it. We want to hear about it.
I got mail. Yay!
I got you a dollar.
Yeah, we put a lot of time into the show, and we put a lot of ourselves in the show too, as you can see. Yeah, and you know we don't hide, we don't really hide it, and you know we are who we are, right? But you know we do operate on the value for value model, which I think is a
model for life, I think.
It is, and it consists, of three T's: time, talent, and treasure. Right? You're usually investing those three things, right? And if you're getting something out of the investment, that's great, right? And if you're not, well, why are you investing, right? And again, however, you know, it all looks the same. You know, at the end of the day, right? I think it's all good things, right? And now, of course, you can send us treasure. That's not something we emphasize here, but you're welcome to, right? We can go to lotuseffect.show and click on that green We Like Money button and send us some cash via PayPal, or if you
do what Weirdo did today, which is use the cash tag $TheLotusEffect33 to send some value.
Yes. You can also go to lotuseffect.shop and buy our crap that's been smeared with brand feces, you know, do that. However, in terms of the person that can say,
"Oh, you the executive producer."
That goes to Sharky for his monthly donation of $7.66 via PayPal. We appreciate you, Sharky. You popped in the chat the other night. We hadn't seen you in a while. I'm glad you're still.
He has a life, my love.
Oh, he does have a life, and he's got a keeper and a couple of
curtain climbers.
A couple of Sharkyettes, you know,
Sharklets,
Sharklets, or something like that, right? So, and Weirdo came in with $5 via Cash App. Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, and all that you do for our show and behind the scenes, because you know Weirdo does a lot of stuff. He's brought a lot of amazing music to the forefront for us. You know, he's trying hard too.
Yeah, exactly.
He got a lot of mouths to feed out there, and yet he still finds a way to throw some of his Fiat Fun coupons at us, and we appreciate him.
Yeah,
for it.
So and we understand it's scratch isn't something everybody's got right now. So we're cool with that. However, we do want to make sure that we're getting something out of this, and so. You know, letting us know that you're listening is one of the most important things you can do to let us to send the act back, right? Let us know that we're being received. You may not always like what we have to say. You might be like Chris Abraham and think that we talk too much shit. Literally, we swear too much for him.
No, we really do.
It's obscene. That's the point.
Exactly.
And honestly, we respect him, and we know that we're not a taste for everyone.
That's right. So, anyway, but just let us know you're listening, right? There's ways you can do that, and of course, do all the subscribe, share, like, and rate, and review, all that bullshit, right? You can find the Lotus Effect in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or in any podcast app where you can add an RSS feed. Actually, it was funny. I was talking with unrelated to this, but my day job. I was talking with somebody because I do a podcast for the day job, and they said, "Oh, I looked it up in Spotify." I'm like, "Oh, that's you're the first person I think I've heard that actually uses Spotify for
which would be hilarious if he was just trolling around Spotify and all of a sudden came across your name and went, "I wonder." Boy, that would be an interesting conversation now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but see, here's the thing. Like, I am who I am, right? And yeah, we all have these different personalities in different contexts, right? And I've kind of maintained them separately for a while, but I don't see the point in doing that anymore. It's like there's a reason I've stopped doing some of the things I do. And if people from my day job find out that I happen to be doing this shit, who fucking cares? I mean, look,
your boss knows and you still have a job.
This fair enough. Yeah. Yeah.
He's even listened even once.
Yeah. He at least he claims to have. Yes. Anyway,
it probably only took once for him to listen to about 5 minutes and go, "I cannot handle this shit."
Yeah, except he's actually met you too. So, you know,
that's the worst part is I've actually met this man. Yeah, I hold him in extremely high regard, which is why I'm like, why would you ever listen to this show?
Yeah, him and I go back though, so it's cool, you know. I don't think he wanted to be my boss. Let's put it that way.
No, I'm sure he didn't, and I'm hoping in the not too distant future that we'll have a chance to meet up in the Holy Land again. May peace come soon.
Oh, yeah, this is not politics. Although when we talk, it seems like when we talk tech on 2.5 Bens, we talk politics.
Somehow it's like a dirty stain that keeps creeping in.
Yes. Anyway, so now the other. Okay. Anyway, so just let us know you're listening, right? If you're listening, first of all, if you're listening, like subscribe in your podcast app, leave a comment or something. I mean, let people know that you're the rate, review, all of that stuff. But
it's more importantly because there is a platform that we both hang out on, and it is
Mastodon.
Now, what do you mean we, Kemosabe? Because I'm pretty much the only one of us that's on Mastodon on a regular basis.
Just because I do not post does not mean I do not lurk.
Well, fair enough. Anyway, you can send us a message on the Massive Dong. I am at phoneboy@lotuseffect.social. My partner here is phoenix@lotuseffect.social. Oh, by the way, one of the videos I came across scrolling actually had your spelling of the name Phoenix. You know,
no.
Yeah, I just thought I'd point that out.
What was the video on?
No, it was, I don't know, it was one of the readers or something that I see. And actually, her first name is Leanna. It's spelled differently, though.
Okay, that's hella freaking creepy.
Yeah, but
there is a little bit of something on my side of the aisle. I recently purchased an item off of eBay from a shop that was the Phoenix something, not the same spelling as mine.
Right.
But I found it very interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, exactly. So the coincidences are adding up here. You can also send us feedback. If you don't use the Massive Dong, right, you might be able to find me on some other platforms. I don't go there too often, so you're better off just sending an email to feedback@lotuseffect.show, which goes to both of us. We also, I think, we still have idontgiveafuck@lotuseffect.show. We do have a snail mail address. If you would like to send us something, please contact us in the back channel. We will we'll get you our address now. But the biggest thing you can do that really shows us that you're part of the tribe here is join us sometime while we're doing the show live. And we do two things, right? So what we do shows on Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern and Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. So on Fridays we either do Rideshare Radio or 2.5 Bens. It's supposed to be on alternating weeks, but sometimes anyway life happens, right? And so Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern we'll do either one of those two things. On Saturdays, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern, we do the show called The Lotus Effect, which you're hearing now, right? Now, there's also, and then after that, we'll play music and we might play Cards Against Humanity. Sometimes we just get on the mic and shoot the
shit.
That's
kind of been a habit that's formed on a Friday night.
Yeah.
If I'm not working or after we do 2.5 Bens sometimes is we whip out a Cards Against Humanity game. So join us sometime. It's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we get on clean feed and turn it dirty. Yeah. And we call it Lotus After Dark if it happens after 10.
Yeah, well, but which hell, our show is happening after 10. Our show is happening after 10 o'clock at this point since we start at 9 p.m. Eastern, right? Even in Central Time by the time we're done where it's 10 o'clock. So yeah, at that point it becomes after dark. I don't know. We might have to take... That might be some rebranding stuff we talk about behind the mic. Anyway, details are on lotuseffect.live because honestly, lotuseffect.live is everything. If you want to listen to the show live, you want to get on the chat. It's all there, right?
It is your go-to for everything Lotus.
That's right. And you can link in all the other shows we do too, right? It's so
another way that you can show some very big value back is to call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah,
that line is boozy because it's Google Voice and it's going to mangle your transcript and turn you into a show title. Now, other than feedback, what's the reason you'd be calling 253-237-3321? Well, of course, it's to weigh in on the weekly topic that we come up with. And this week, we've got a Lulu for you. We want to know, do you believe in aliens, the extraterrestrial kind, not the ice kind?
That's right. And I can tell you that I think that's going to be a based on the calls that we've gotten so far, I think it's going to be a lively segment.
I think it's going to be fantastic. And if I'm honest, I'm less afraid of the live long and prosper aliens than I am the Minnesota daycare aliens.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, whatever the case is, right? So whether you believe in aliens or not, or don't know, or an agnostic about the whole thing, caller text.
Yeah, I was going to say, or frankly, don't give a shit.
Exactly. Caller text 253-237-3321. And then take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor. I can take it.
We can take it, but we ain't taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
That's right. We say it every week. Be respectful. Don't be anti-Semitic. Don't be racist. That's my job. If you couldn't tell from the daycare comment about our call-in segment, just don't be a shithead. You know, we know it's the beginning of shithead season, like as if that season ever ended, but just be respectful because we're not going to put up with it. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that. I think we have some advice we need to take.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Okay, even though this is not related to Leslie Nielsen, this is something I'm going to put it in the toast and jam. The Kentucky Fried Movie, right? Which is the reason that came up is because
we'll talk about Kentucky Fried Movie and toast and jam.
Yeah, I need to make sure I write it.
You should probably do that now.
Yeah,
while you're doing that,
yeah,
I will talk to the people about the fact that our first half of our Health Rich show is never ever going to be
brought to you by Pfizer.
Because fuck Pfizer.
Yeah, well, yes. And we're reading the book. We're reading the books about, we're currently reading.
Selling Sickness, and now we've moved on to
a bottle of lies.
Yeah. Catherine Eben.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, they're all not so great. So, anyway, now let's let's get into the show. And this is, and I don't know how many, I can't tell you how many times I've woken up where one nostril feels blocked, blah, blah, blah. Well, I didn't know this thing about the nasal cycle, which actually swaps airflow about every 2 hours.
I like fresh air, motherfucker.
Now, certainly one of the most things about being sick or having allergies, I say seasonal because I think my allergies stopped being seasonal a long time ago, is it makes your nose stuffy and blocked. It makes breathing in through your nostrils frustrating, if not altogether impossible. Especially if you can't do that when you're sleeping at night, it's not great for you. But even when you aren't sick, perhaps you notice that when you take a deep breath, only one of your nostrils seems to be allowing the air in. Now, before you panic and wonder if you're coming down with something, what you're experiencing is actually, a normal body process. Multiple times a day, the nostril, without even really noticing it, the nostrils naturally switch between a dominant nostril for airflow. The process is called the nasal cycle, and it plays an important role in the health of our nose. I'm actually surprised when I read the book "Breathe" by I forgot the guy's name, but I don't remember him talking about that. Maybe he did now, but James Nestor, I think was the book was called "Breathe," and that's breathing is a real important thing to get right, and understanding it's part of your health process is being able to breathe. And so the body actually switches the dominant nostril as frequently as every 2 hours while we're awake. Now, the switch is less frequent when we're sleeping as our breathing rate slows and the volume of air entering and leaving the body lowers. Now, there are two key aspects to the nasal cycle, congestion and decongestion. Now, during the congestion phase, one nostril will experience reduced airflow, while the opposite nostril will be open or decongested, allowing for more air to pass through it. The decongested phase actually fatigues the open nostril as air dries it out and brings pathogens into contact with it. This is why it's important for the dominant nostril to swap. This alternating cycle is automatic, regulated subconsciously by the hypothalamus in the brain. Now, however, some people have no nasal cycle, such as those who have a hypothematic disorder. Now, there's also evidence that the left nostril may be more dominant, particularly in right-handed people. Now, I've never noticed this myself, but I'm probably going to pay attention to it now, I guess. Now, studies looking at nasal breathing even suggest that when the right nostril is dominant, the body is in a more alert or stressed state. But when the left nostril takes over, the body is in a more relaxed state. Now, the nasal cycle is important for a number of reasons. It protects the lining of the nose and the respiratory system. At least 12,000 liters of air pass through it each day, making it a key frontline defense from pathogens. Having the dominant nostril alternate reduces the risk of damage and also makes it easier for the nasal passage to protect against the pathogens. Now, the nose also has to rest and repair. Air exposure dries it out, so without time to recuperate, this could make it easier for pathogens and inflammation to cause damage. Yeah, it definitely. When I start having issues with my congestion, I definitely, if I take Afrin, it's one of the reasons I try not to take Afrin unless I absolutely need to, because if my nose is open for too long, I start getting more allergens, and that's a problem.
My ex used to use nasal spray like so many times a day. He would like buy in bulk. It was obscene.
Yeah. And now part of the congestion process also sees increased blood flow to the nose's vessels. This ensures the nostrils are moistened properly for both the repair and the recovery process. So the air is warmed and it moistens as it passes through the nostril. I think it also generates nitrous oxide or something too, this breathing through the nose. I remember that from the James Nestor book. Now, a number of things can affect the nasal cycle's normal function. Respiratory conditions such as cold and flu can result in an increase in mucus production. This restricts how easily the nasal passages are able to alternate. By the way, I think food makes a difference too. I think
because of inflammation.
Yeah, exactly. So some of the things I've been dealing with, because I've been having that tea on a regular basis, ginger lemon tea, it's actually kind of cleared out some of the congestion I've had. And I know I've also cleaned up my, a lot of things in my diet are cleaned up too. I feel like but it's all helping, right? And it's reducing that, because I get, congestions. Yeah. Congestions usually assign something that might be a little off, right? Allergens
like pollen and dust mites.
Yeah, they can cause severe inflammation of the nasal tissues, again, impeding proper function of the nasal cycle. Now, certain medications, such as those for high blood pressure, can cause irritation of the nasal lining, too. Oh, look, it's safe and effective.
Dude, No, you know what, Phone Boy? That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because the ex is on high blood pressure meds and has been, I suspect, for a hot minute. I don't remember, but I know the nose spray thing was before me. I don't necessarily remember because I don't want to remember, but it would stand to reason that it could be, let's say, intensified by the high blood pressure meds.
Oh, it could very well be, right? Now, it's because these drugs affect the blood vessels throughout the body, including those in the nose. Now, the article warns about overuse of these drugs and tells you to get that checked out if it's blocked for more than a couple of weeks. Get on some drugs, get on the drug that killed River Phoenix, right?
Well, they want you on all the drugs all the time.
Yeah, that's right. All the drugs all the time. I have to write that down.
Yes, probably. You do.
Yeah.
And you should probably write that down while I talk about how to lose visceral fat and why most advice gets it wrong. Because I'm fat, fat, fat. Come on. Really, really fat. So we love when Dr. Kate posts a new article on her site, and we also love when she has clips that we can get. But other than that,
we're reading Dark Calories after we finish Bottle of Lies,
which is Dr. Kate Shanahan's book.
Yeah, one of her books. She's had a few.
Yes, yes, yes. I simply meant it was one of.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's your story.
Yes, it is. So belly fat, or visceral fat, does not speak well of our metabolic health. It's not from a lack of doing crunches 2 hours a day. This has nothing to do with metabolic imbalance. When doctors talk about how visceral fat is associated with things like diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver, and even certain cancers, they're right on the mark. It is. But here's where the story goes sideways. Visceral fat isn't what causes all these problems. Visceral fat is the result of a metabolic breakdown that leads to all kinds of problems, including fat around the gut. In other words, visceral fat isn't the cause, it's the symptom. It's a symptom of a deep-seated metabolic problem. In other words, before you develop obvious visceral fat, your metabolism is already under stress. That's why you develop it. It's not driven that much by genetics. And while diabetes is often pegged as a contributing cause, diabetes itself is also a manifestation of the same deeper metabolic issue. So in Dr. Kate's work, studying metabolic disease and modern diets, she found that the metabolic driver of visceral fat is almost universally overlooked. So much so that authorities assume that visceral fat causes metabolic disease, which is exactly backwards. This matters because it places way too much importance on the fat itself, which makes people think weight loss is a solution. Also, suggesting that the fat itself is the problem opens the door for opportunities selling quick fix wellness products that waste your money and do nothing to address your metabolic dysfunction. In the article, which we'll have a link to in the show notes, she talks about how all the various supplements that allegedly help with this don't do a whole lot. Visceral fat isn't just extra weight. It's a change in where the body stores energy. When your metabolism is working well, excess calories tend to be stored under the skin in subcutaneous fat. But when your metabolism isn't working right, like when you have insulin resistance, the body begins storing more energy deep inside the abdomen, around organs, and in the liver. Yeah, it's a protection mechanism, oddly enough. So visceral fat is less about a bulging belly and more about how your metabolism is functioning. When metabolism improves, visceral fat often decreases naturally. The most effective way to improve metabolic health is to remove the foods that disrupt it. Start by reducing or eliminating the biggest metabolic stressors in the modern diet, including refined sugars, refined flour products, industrial seed oils, or the hateful eight, as she calls them, highly processed packaged foods, and protein powders or isolates. These foods tend to drive unstable blood sugar and insulin. These foods tend to drive unstable blood sugar and insulin signaling.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they're talking about all the food. Okay, so we were in the grocery store today, now I'm thinking about it. And I'm thinking, protein oatmeal. I'm going, okay, well, aren't all these things that are adding protein, aren't they using, like, protein powders or isolates to do that, or basically what's
in the- Yes, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, so, okay, well, so they're just adding more ways to kill you. Got it.
Well, if I may... and I know all the bodybuilders out there who are listening are probably going to sigh deeply and yell at their fondle slabs or whatever they're listening to the show on. This is why you don't need that protein shake after a hard workout, bro, because you don't need that protein powder isolate in your body fucking up your metabolism. Just say no, bro. So instead, eat real foods. Again, after a workout, and... this is one of the few times you'll hear me say to eat something sugary, okay? But grab an apple or an orange. Now, oranges have a lot of sugar, I know, but they also have a good amount of fiber, which is going to help your body recover and repair in so much as not feeling like you want to hork down an entire 10-pack of Taco Bell tacos. But I digress. Dr. Kate's first book, Deep Nutrition, reveals how our ancestors used real food to build increasingly resilient bodies. Our nutritional needs have not changed, and in spite of the fact that we now demonize red meat and animal fats, those foods are some of the best for our bodies. Whole proteins, such as eggs, meat, fish, and poultry, along with animal fats and virgin plant oils, as well as some nuts, legumes, vegetables, and a small amount of fruit, can all play a role in healing metabolic dysfunction. Now, yes, you did hear me speak about having nuts and legumes very sparingly because they are very carby. And again, fruit only in season, only in region. That's the rule. So when meals are built around real foods rather than processed ingredients, the body's energy system, they begin functioning more normally. And insulin sensitivity improves, inflammation decreases, and fat distribution often begins to normalize. So over time, the process commonly leads to a gradual reduction in visceral fat, which is why when you start doing the whole no sugar, no grains thing, you notice that you notice the visceral fat around your midsection does start reducing, because what happens is the fat that's contained in that area is turned into water, literally. And then it just...
Well, that's what happens when you... Yeah, because when the fat breaks down, because it's... I forget what it is. It's basically your body fat is carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen, right? And yeah, when it breaks, it's a big carbon, long carbon molecule that gets broken.
And we all know that when hydrogen and oxygen get together, water's formed. Yeah.
Water and carbon dioxide, those are the things that would come out of it, right? So yeah. That's all good stuff, I didn't read Deep Nutrition, but anyway, I mean, it's a lot, probably covers.
You know
a lot
what? We should probably put it on our
list. Dark, I think dark calories covers a lot of the same ground. Honestly, so
that's fine, but irrelevant to the fact. Get yourself some of Dr. Kate Shanahan's materials. They're very eye opening, and
yeah, maybe I'll put a link in the show notes.
That's a great idea
to the book. The dark calories book, because that's what we do. Yeah, anyway, so
yeah, especially because we've started jacking our jaws extensively about the fact we've begun reading as a couple's activity, and
yeah, exactly.
It's been really beneficial. It's just really nice to, you enjoy reading and I enjoy listening to you read, so it's a win-win situation.
There you go. Now, oh boy, this one touched me personally, because I've had experience with this class of device. So, patients are alarmed after common medical device is linked to 7 deaths and hundreds of injuries.
You might die.
Yeah. Michael Ford was not in good health, but his type 2 diabetes was manageable. His son, Devontae Ford, was his full-time caregiver, bathing Michael and administering his medications and dutifully responding to the dips and peaks in Michael's blood sugar. So when father and son woke one November morning in their Oakland, California home to a low blood sugar alert from Michael's Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, which is a continuous glucose monitor, it's part of a top-tier glucose monitoring system from medical manufacturer Abbott. Devontae did not question the reading. Instead, he did what his doctors had instructed. He gave his dad fast-acting carbohydrates. Now, Devontae had no way of knowing that 8 days later, Abbott would release an urgent warning notifying U.S. consumers that about 3 million Freestyle Libre 3 and Libre 3 Plus sensors were at risk of producing low readings, and the company had received reports of 7 deaths and more than 730 serious injuries worldwide.
Holy crap.
He had no idea that the number that kept appearing in the morning on Michael's device was catastrophically inaccurate, according to a lawsuit that Devontae 25 filed last month. So when a cup of coffee with 2 spoonfuls of sugar barely raised Michael's blood sugar, Devontae brought him another. The number on the Michael's monitor edged up, but then went back down. Now, a normal glucose range is about 70 to about 180 milligrams per deciliter, with lower levels expected while fasting. Mystified that Michael's level kept hovering around 68, Devontae gave him a cup of sweet and iced tea, hoping to get that number up. Okay.
Stop. You about to cause me to flip my fucking lid. Can I go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I step?
Go for it.
Because what the fuck is wrong with you, motherfucker? I understand. Okay. First couple readings, they're low. You lazy motherfucker. How dare you just keep fooling... I'm triggered. You kept filling your father with sugar instead of taking a fucking actual finger stick reading. Ugh!
Yeah. So, and also, I was going to go about the fact that 68, if you're 68, it's not that bad.
No, it really isn't.
No. When I was still taking metformin and I was like into this stuff, I actually went to my doctor and went, taking this continuing to take this metformin when my blood sugar is like, getting to like 60, I don't think that's a good idea. He's like, "Yeah, okay, fine." Yeah. So, this is where also, if you look at the guidelines, I go, okay, yeah, 68 is probably that's one of those close enough, right? You wouldn't, because if you actually read these things, there's a plus or minus on these things. It kind of makes you go that if you actually do the math on it, you go, okay, so it won't tell you if you're, especially on the low end of things, it's really the accuracy is really bad, right?
But here's another problem I have. Okay. I'm much calmer now. Common sense should dictate to you that if you've given your father 2 cups of coffee with essentially 4 spoonfuls of sugar in it, and that number has not moved, you have a problem. Either your meter is malfunctioning, as in this case, or your dad needs to go to a fucking hospital. I'm at a loss why this man did not have common sense to go, I've given dad two cups of coffee.
Well, okay, his kid was not that, okay. Given that Michael Ford was like 25, his kid wasn't that old. So let's be...
Okay, so stop there. Why are you entrusting a kid that doesn't... No.
Okay, so... Anyway,
no.
Okay, so let me get through
the
story.
Wait a minute. No, I'm pretty sure... No, he's 25. Read again.
Yeah, Michael...
His kid's 25.
Hold on, let me see.
Yes, sir, because it says lawsuit that Devontae, 25, filed last month in the article.
Well, it depends on how old, yeah, oh, okay.
You
well.
Missed that, sir. His son was not
yeah.
young.
Well,
his son was old enough to have a brain, yeah. clearly didn't use it, however.
Yeah. Okay, well, there we go. So, instead, Michael's speech slowed. His eyelids became heavy. Panicked, Devontae called an ambulance. And when the paramedics arrived, Devontae was stunned to see Michael's blood sugar reading on their equipment. 551 milligrams per deciliter. Yeah, that's bad.
That? You're on the verge of a coma.
Yeah, I
You're
know.
About to go into a diabetic coma. Because of that.
Yeah.
At that reading is so fucking dangerous. At 300, your ass is on the way to the hospital. At 500, you're lucky to not meet the Undertaker.
Yeah. My heart just dropped, Devontae said. Obviously, there's a problem here. Now, the discovery that Michael's blood sugar had not been as low as his glucose monitor indicated came too late, the lawsuit says. The next day, in a hospital intensive care unit, Michael, 68, died following multiple cardiac arrests.
Yeah, and guess what? Now his son has that on his heart for the rest of his life that he killed his father. You realize that, right? Because essentially, he did.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm going to be real with you. Yeah. By doing what he did, okay? Like I said, 551. You come back from that, it's a miracle.
Yeah. So, okay. So diabetes, which is a condition that which the body doesn't produce enough insulin or cannot use it properly, well, that's what the way that they anyway, I'm not going there. Anyway, it requires patients to monitor their blood sugar vigilantly, and it affects an estimated 40.1 million people in the United States. Uncontrolled, it can cause serious complications ranging from blindness to heart and kidney damage. The Abbott recall has put a spotlight on diabetes patients' growing reliance on technology meant to help them and the threat it can pose to their physical and psychological health when that technology is flawed.
Or fails.
Yeah. Like I said, the little booklets, even on the standard blood glucose meters, because you need a prescription to get one of the CGMs, right? So,
and again, circling back, this is what bugs the hell out of me, is that he just blindly expected that meter was reading correctly and did not double check. Even in nursing school. Or as an EMT, both things that I've done.
And I'm
getting a reading, then I'm going, okay, this looks fucked up. I'm going to take a different piece of equipment. I'm going to take a different cuff or something. I'm going to validate that the reading I'm getting is accurate.
Yeah.
I'm gobsmacked.
With the finger stick things. That the amount of error that they listed, because I, you know, because I'm one of those people that'll actually
read. I think it's a plus or minus three.
No. It's a lot more than that. It's like plus or minus 15% of accuracy. Right?
Wow, that's extreme.
Yeah. So it which basically means that you're higher or lower. Anyway, that just like. I don't even trust the finger stick, but I think even the CGMs say, yeah, you know, you should check your blood glucose with an actual with a finger stick occasionally, right? So they even tell you to do that in the documentation. So
yeah, so again, this I know this is going to come out sounding very heartless, but the fact that he did not double check the machine's assumption, if you will, before just continuing to pump sugar into his father. I'm gobsmacked.
Yeah, well, anyway, so now the recall prompted at least three proposed class action lawsuits in the U.S., along with Devontae's wrongful death suit. Three other people in California, Washington, and North Carolina plan to sue over harm as they sustained from the incorrect readings their attorneys told NBC News. When the continuous glucose monitors debuted more than two decades ago, they were a complete game changer for diabetes patients, says some expert, blah, blah, blah. An alternative to reliable but tedious finger sticks in which diabetics draw small amounts of blood throughout the day to check their sugar levels. Continuous glucose monitors automatically detect blood sugar levels in the fluid just below the skin surface with tiny filaments on sensors attached to patients' arms. The Abbott sensor is about the size of a stack of two pennies, typically cost up to $20 per month for patients whose commercial insurance covers the system, and they offer 24/7 data that doctors say is dependable. But it is technology, another expert says, and sadly, technology can break, and when it does, it's a life or death situation. Yeah. And it, in this case, yeah, it's clearly harming people. But you can't trust the machines all the time, folks. Which you when you wonder why we're maybe not so so fond of AI. Yeah, we've learned not, this is what you know, what dude, the real dude's name Ben No, right? Is we know that the technology isn't always foolproof. It doesn't always succeed when it's supposed to. It fails for one reason or another, right? Sometimes it's stupidity. Sometimes it's benign neglect. Sometimes it's literally just trying to get shit through fucking, especially reading these drugs, with the bottle of lies stuff and reading the kinds of things they do to basically, to get by regulators. They'll ship fucking anything.
It's dark. You guys really should read this book. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But again, I'm heartbroken that people just blindly trust technology. They become so complacent that it will work, it does work, this and that. And in a life and death situation like this, you cannot be that complacent. That one moment, and believe me, I'm living that with having lost my mom. That moment, you lose focus for that one moment. You don't do the right thing in that one moment. And the results can be catastrophic. And the fact that, he didn't double check the reading by doing a finger stick, that's rough.
Yeah,
because
it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but that's negligence.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, the system doesn't really, it's like, it kind of gives you all these tools, but really doesn't, they're only useful if you know how to use them, folks. Right. And understand when you might want to, trust, but verify and check something else. Right. This is what we got to, technology is great when it works. It doesn't always work.
Precisely. It's great when it works. And when it doesn't, well, bad shit can happen. But you know what's not bad?
No.
The cavalcade of stupidity.
No, it isn't.
Hi-de-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. And since I'm MIA, here's Phone Boy to take over.
Rev is doing something today, but yeah, he's helping his uncle move again, apparently. But anyway, so we had a great one for you this week, though. I think the Rev would approve of this one. Alvin Scott Beach, born January 13th of 1931, died February 13th, 1996, was an American actor, writer, and DJ, best known for his performance in the 1960s-themed 1973 film American Graffiti. Born Alvin Scott Beach, he appeared in numerous motion pictures, most notably as a German scientist patterned after Werner von Braun in The Right Stuff. His deep voice was often heard in films. He once said that director George Lucas liked his voice and often used him in his films, beginning with THX 1138, which is funny because we were talking about that. Movie earlier when we were
literally before we found. Oh, excuse me. We found out that the Rev needed us to pinch hit for him.
Yeah.
You, goddamn hiccups.
Yeah. Yeah, we started. Yeah, I was talking.
You
about
were talking about TX 1138. You were saying how Robert Duvall was the lead and everything like that. Which great loss. Yeah. We lost him recently.
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So we were talking about this. Yeah, because by the way, it's a great film to watch, right? If you haven't already. And I actually was funny because I went back and played I pulled a couple of clips on YouTube and I'm like, there he is. There's Scott Beach right there.
Yes, he did. Yes. Spaceballs.
Yes,
it was Spaceballs.
Well, he was in Spaceballs. He was in a few things, right? Anyway, he also appeared as Mr. Gordon in American Graffiti and provided an uncredited stormtrooper voice in Star Wars. Now Beach also this got my attention. Beach also served as the original announcer on the Newlywed Game after being beaten out for the hosting job by Bob Eubanks. Wow,
that is crazy. crazy.
Yeah, Johnny Jacobs. Yeah, so so it was funny that he pulled that. We found this one, right? I knew about this track because Dr. Demento played it back in the day, right? And
it's a really good one, yeah, too.
It was released in 1976 on Captain Records and was actually included in Dr. Demento's Dementia Royale, which was released in 1980, and we'll have a vinyl copy of it soon.
I was going to say, which you now own thanks to eBay, and it's a VJ.
Yeah, it's
a VJ double plus. Yeah, it's a VG double plus, which means it's really good condition inside and out.
Okay, so this is, so, yeah. By the way. VJ double plus or something. We're going to play Religion and Politics.
Religion and politics often make some people lose all perspective and give way to ranting and raving and carrying on like emotional children. They either refuse to discuss it with reason or else they prefer argumentum ad hominem, which is a hell of a way to conduct a discussion. Well, anyhow, not long ago, I was talking about the elections and how the campaigns were ignoring the issues and sticking instead to invective and personal crap that had nothing to do with the substantive problems of running a government, which is all true, as you know, if you followed the speeches and so-called debates of the candidates. Anyhow, one of the guys I was talking with said not a word in the whole conversation except at the end when he suddenly chuckled and said we were all full of shit and why didn't we go live in Russia or China if that was the way we all hated the United States of America. Next thing you know, the whole blooming discussion was more like a brawl and the epithets flew thick and fast and the noise was incredible. Someone said son of a bitch and I think he said bastard. I couldn't be sure. It was also confusing. Well, anyhow, I was attempting to get it all back on a rational level. I tried, for example, to talk to the one who had started it all and I asked him just what did he mean we were all full of shit. Was he making a statement of fact as he knew it and where was his documentation to back up his claim? I think Socrates would have been proud of the way I refuted his argument, that is, I tried to refute it, but all he could offer by way of rebuttal was more of the same about how we were all full of shit, but he wouldn't say why, he just kept on repeating it, that and the part about Russia and China and communist dupes, and I'll have to confess that I got a bit angry and told him to stuff his ideas up his ass, which you don't have to tell me is hardly a way to convince anyone in an argument. Then he got salty and threatened to give me a punch in the mouth if I didn't shut up, and I really got hot, and the others did too, and we all beat the shit out of Mr. Conservative, and after all, he had only himself to be blamed. This is still a free country, and anyone telling a fellow like me, brother, you're full of shit, better be good and ready to answer politely when asked if he'd care to say why.
That was a great track. I love that.
That is an amazing track.
Yes. And since that was the whole thing, we don't need to play it in Studio 33.
It's got a great cadence to it, though. I really like it a lot.
Okay. Well, anyway, I guess we go on to the next segment. What is that?
Yeah, no rides this week. Phoenix epically fucked off. However, part of that reason will be discussed in the next segment.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
However, the one thing we hope you have plans to do is to let us know how you feel about aliens at 253-237-3321. That is our weigh-in topic for this week. Honey, what did we do tonight for dinner?
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
We actually had a delicious welcome to spring Greek salad with some sliced tenderloin, beef tenderloin on top. It was so good. Like, for whatever reason, Google Pictures or whoever handles my pictures on my phone.
Apple.
Yeah, okay, so whatever fucking Silicon Valley suck me dry company is handling my pictures decided the other day to pop up a photo of a salad that I had made with some feta and sliced steak and stuff on it. And I had mentioned to you, like, I really want a salad. So we made a Greek kind of salad with tomatoes and red onions, cucumbers, yada, yada, yada. And we put the steak on top and...
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Yeah. And it was good, too.
Homemade dressing, because I don't fuck with any of that dressing made with seed oils.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to do that. So, it was great.
What else was great is actually part of why we have our first story, because the reason I didn't work part of the week is because I had my son here from Sunday until Tuesday evening, which brought us to our first story.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, what were we doing here? We were playing
board games after dinner one night.
Yeah, we were playing Yahtzee, right? And, you know, there's nothing special here, but I will tell you that we had a lot of just weird sort of random roles and shit that you would never expect to see.
And many that truly, you cannot script this. Phone Boy has the dice, shaking them, going, I just need a three or a six. I just need a three or a six. Rolls the fucking dice, two threes, two sixes. Then, yeah. My son busts off a sorry of ones. I give up my sorry because we're almost to the end of the game and I'm like, I'm never getting a sorry. Yeah, I fucking rolled five sixes. I was pissed.
You talked about sorry and then talked about Yahtzee, honey.
No, I'm talking about Yahtzee.
Okay.
I wasn't talking anything about sorry. I was talking full Yahtzee.
Okay.
1000% Yahtzee.
I'm going to have to listen to this when I go back, but anyway, we'll go on.
Well, if I said sorry, I meant Yahtzee, obviously, because we're talking dice and how you were talking about needing a three and a six, and you rolled them both.
Yeah, then you said, anyway, sorry, my bad.
Sorry, the new Yahtzee, write that shit down. Yeah. Speaking of sorry, we played what we refer to as tactical sorry, and it was great fun. It was cutthroat. If you were anywhere near getting home, your ass got sent back with a sorry. There was a lot of just happenstances that the card numbers matched up so you could land on the same space and knock somebody back to their home base. We had such a howl of a good time. We laughed so hard. It was great fun. It was nice having my son over. But it's also nice having our house back. But that's just, you know, that's with anybody. You know, you like your space and you kind of hold it sacred. And yeah. Another thing that we hold sacred is vinyl. Oh, my goodness. So you all heard the complaint that I had about getting the Slippery When Wet vinyl that ended up being warped. I was so angry. However, I have not only gotten a refund from the person who sold it, I bought a different one. It came in. I listened to it today as a preparation for the show, and I realized, my God, that vinyl is a banger both sides.
I was going to say, I was never like a big Bon Jovi fan, probably because it was popular at a time I wasn't listening to a lot of music that was popular at the time. So it's not to say that I wouldn't have, but yeah. But we listened to, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I recognized at least three of the songs. I mean, but the rest of it was, you know, I mean, great things. We also got, I don't know, we still have some other stuff that we need to listen to, I think.
We've got a couple of Tom Lehrer albums that we purchased. I'm waiting. If you weren't here for Rideshare Radio last night, there's actually an auction going on eBay for a copy of Slippery When Wet that is not from the U.S. and it's also a collector's item because it's not the typical cover. It's a different one.
It's a different cover altogether. Exactly.
An entirely different cover altogether.
Yeah.
But I'm keeping an eye on it, and about midweek auction ends, and I'll report back next week as to whether or not I am the proud owner of a collector's item of that particular album. But I also ordered 7800 Fahrenheit by Bon Jovi, which is the first tape, that I ever owned in my entire life. The only music I ever owned, and it was given to me by my
husband. Well, there you go. So. Yeah, well, we're rebuilding the music library because it seems like we try to find stuff in the
that copy of Dr. Demento that we ordered
that's
today.
Well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. There's that, and there's I don't know. We got a lot of cool stuff in our vinyl collection. Considering 4 years ago I had no vinyl at all. So,
oh my God, you've got like what, five, six crates now?
Five, I think.
Yeah, pretty soon it'll be six, I don't doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
We keep up with this eBay shit.
Well, we're also, honestly, the other thing that's happening too here is that we also keep buying
movies,
DVDs, yeah. So so because what I've realized is that first of all that you know, as we've learned through our years, right? If you want to own something, you need to have a physical copy of it, and hopefully on some medium that's not going to get bricked remotely or something. And so, I've acquired. So there's certain movies I've acquired because the few movies I had were A on VHS and B left behind in the insurrection. So Yeah, there's a reason I have a DVD player and, you know, a Blu-ray player and I've been buying movies.
It's also a great way if there's a movie that I like that you've never seen or vice versa, that we can share it with one another.
Which is exactly what we did in the case of Kentucky Fried Movie. Now, Kentucky yes. Fried Movie came out in 1977. It's done by the Zucker brothers, the same idiots that gave you Airplane, The Naked Gun, and probably a bunch of other stuff.
Classics.
Classic movie. So we were I don't remember, sometime this week, I said, hey.
It was literally last night, night before?
Yeah, it was a Thursday night. It was Thursday night, yeah, because we didn't do it Friday, because we did it on Friday, because we were... Anyway.
Well, I didn't think we had done it on Friday, because of the fact we have Rideshare Radio, yeah. So, like, Thursday
Yeah,
night,
we did it on Thursday, so...
You were like, hey, this is only about an hour, do you want to watch it, since we purchased it? And I was like, yeah, fuck it, why not?
Yes, and, okay, so, you have to understand, so this movie, there isn't a plot to this movie, necessarily. Well, I guess A Fistful of Yen, which is the kung fu movie spoof in the movie.
So Bruce Lee-esque.
Yes, with the kind of shit that, you know, the kind of, and the a bunch of, you know, like.
Racist as fuck.
Yeah, this was, again, 1977, right, and the Zucker Brothers, and so you've got shit like Cleopatra Schwartz, a black woman who's
with the Hasidic Jew.
Yeah, with the Hasidic Jew. Yeah, then you get, yeah. I mean, the Fistful of Yen thing was so fucking racist.
No, you don't get more racist than a white guy literally stepping into the center of a dice game and yelling niggers and running like a motherfucker. You could not do that. In 2025, much like in Blazing Saddles.
Or 2026.
Or 2026.
You're having a time slip there, honey.
Wow. Yeah. Why the fuck was I thinking about that? I know it's 26. Where's my head? Yeah. But I'm just thinking, like, back in the days of Blazing Saddles and Kentucky Fried Movie and shit, you could get away with that for whatever stupid reason. Nowadays, oh, hell to the no. You could never get away with half or a quarter of the things they did back then. But, oh my God, this was insane. One of the clips we have stolen for which is very applicable.
Christ, did a cow shit in here?
Yes, which was a, yeah.
I now know the origin of that clip.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's a lot of great things in that. We probably need to make some clips on that.
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Yeah, very end of the movie. Anyway, so
the
yes.
whole thing is great. If you've never seen Kentucky Fried Movie and you're not easily offended, of course, if you're listening to this show, the likelihood is you're not easily offended. If you haven't seen it, see it. It's an hour out of your life you'll never get back, but it's kind of fun. It has a few things that, yeah, just. For me anyway, there were several times I just looked at Phone Boy and I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, this is insane.
Yeah, this is some of the stupidest shit you'll ever see is in this.
But I think that, so if I may, and I fucking may, because I'm part of the, you know, I'm half of the, you know, stars of this piece of shit. I think watching something just objectively stupid is actually kind of good for you in a way. I really do. Because in our normal lives, we're very stressed out. We're running from deadline to deadline. We've got to feed the kids. We've got to, you know, get ready for work. We've got to do this. There's a lot of adulting that has to happen. Taking time out, and we talked about this last week in the whole how do you take care of yourself and not in the, you know, after party way. You know, what's something you do for yourself? Something you can do for yourself is literally sit down and watch something mindless. It doesn't have to make sense. It can be fucking abjectly stupid, but it gives you a chance not to be in the constant fight or flight state of having to do something, worrying about the world. You can let go and just laugh. And we here at Lotus recommend it highly.
Yeah, well, and also just doing things that like you do for yourself, which is, you know, creating things. I mean, even
it's kind of like the candle shit that I was doing right before the show for my for my Etsy store and my eBay store, because I like the smell of candles and I like making candles, and my mom and I made candles when I was younger, so it's something that's near and dear to my heart. So it's something that I've begun doing because I want to share my happiness, and it's therapeutic.
Yeah, and actually, it's kind of funny you mentioned therapeutic because that's kind of where because one of the ways you can also do some creative things, and one of the few ways that I used to actually do this in my past life is write, which is probably one of the few things I can, you know, honestly, one of the few things I can, I do it as part of my job. You know, I mean, seriously, like this is what I do for my day job, and it is. It was funny because I was going into my WordPress site and I was looking at my drafts. I'm going, shit, I got like four things here that I haven't even published, and I'm probably not going to publish most of them. But I did actually publish this one that I put into the chat called Just Say No. And honestly, it's weird because it's an idea that we've been kind of talking about in general, which is kind of opting out of the stuff that's really like, you know, you can decide where to put your time, talent, and treasure, right? I mean, to some degree, and wherever you can do that, that's where you need to make the choices that are going to benefit you, right? And you know, just because, you know, somebody thinks you're obligated to do it, or you have to do it this, that, or the other. No, you don't really, if you think about it. And you need to, you know, this is where you start reclaiming your, you know, becoming, you know, reclaiming your life, so to speak, right? You start saying no to this, to the fake and gay shit, right? And that was kind of the idea there. I had mostly fleshed it out. I just hadn't pushed the publish button on it. Now, one that I wrote some years ago, which I'm also going to put in the, links to both of these are going to be in the show notes right now. I'd posted this at the beginning of Trump's first term. So this is beginning of 2017. Has the internet become the Tower of Babel? And I think reading this now, because I think we were talking about the fact that, you know, people aren't talking to each other. Well, the reason why is they can't understand each other, right? Much like the Tower of Babel. And I went, oh crap, I wrote something about this, you know, a long time ago. And I went and read it, and I read it to you, and you were like, yeah, that's, you know, that's pretty right on, right?
I mean, it is.
Yeah, I mean, I could read it now if I want to. I mean, there's nothing that says I can't. It's my show, damn it. It's our show. But I'll leave it at least an exercise for the reader, because yeah, it quotes the Bible, and you know, and there's nothing wrong with quoting the Bible, but it's just, what's amazing to me is that this idea that we've been what we've endured as a species is that we can't, you know, yeah, that we can't talk to each other, right? Maybe that's in some cases not a bad thing, but the other hand is that we should be able to talk, we should be able to communicate with each other, and the environment has been made so complicated by everybody, by all of the, you know, all of the division and hate and all this other stuff that we
because it's truly a race war out there. For no other reason than because, you know, I'm white, you're black, or I'm white, you're Mexican, or I'm, you know, black, you're Chinese. It doesn't matter. There's this innate division that's occurred in our world. For what fucking reason? Not every black person is a nigger. Not every white person is a cracker. Not every Mexican is a slacker.
And some white people are niggers, by the way.
But you goddamn right. Yeah. And some fucking hardworking Mexicans, blacks, Native Americans. There's hardworking people everywhere from every class. It doesn't fucking matter what background you come from.
Yeah.
If you are a good person, you are a good person. If you are a piece of shit, you are a piece of shit. That is not exclusive to color, race, religion, creed, whatever.
Yeah, and I've seen it on both sides of the tracks. So I mean, there are good. There are people that are aligned with the light, and there are people who are not. Right. I think that's the best way to say it. But anyway, this was so. And I actually probably, this is something I haven't been doing a whole lot of creative writing, and it's something that I've done. You know, I got paid. The job I have now is because I wrote shit and put it on the internet, and people thought it was, you know. And it was useful to them. I mean, yeah, it's been professionally useful to me for a long time. So I've done good by writing. And I mean, hell, I wrote two books. I can, you know, and people think I can write, you know, other books, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I can. It's just a question of, yeah, I think this is one of the ways I've realized about writing for me is how I kind of work through things. And I didn't have anybody else to psychoanalyze me. I just psychoanalyzed myself in writing and posted it on the internet, you know,
and people read it
and maybe got something out of it. Yeah. So maybe I need to do more of that again. I don't know. We don't, you know, there's so much stuff that's not written by humans anymore. I don't know, you know, yeah.
I think that's why it's really important that you're doing what you're doing, because it's you know, proof of your humanity. And I think people need people who are actually people, not chatbots, not whatever. We need that human connection to be rekindled. And I think doing what you're doing and what we individually in our own arenas are doing, and we encourage you all to do, you know, shine your light in whatever space you are. You know, I say bloom where you're planted, and I mean that. You know, find something that is a passion to you that you can do, whether it be, you know, if you want to post about everything you're cooking, like the silly shit that I do, do it. If you want to post writings about your ponderings, do it. You want to make videos in the woods screaming at trees, do it. Shine your light in your own place. And with that, you know what else you're good at, Phone Boy? Tarot readings.
Yeah, here we are. And we're at that point where we do the tarot reading. And the deck that I have today is actually one of my first decks, actually, which is the Tarot de Marseille, which in this particular version was created by an Israeli in like 2010 or something. When I first, it was one of the first tarot decks I've got. It's one of the few that I think is the only one of the, no, it's not, that's not true. Well, I've got that and another one I'm using that are still, that I still use, currently. And the way I pick the tarot decks, of course, is I roll a dice and I don't use the same tarot deck twice. It's just kind of it's something to sort of randomize and get, and each deck has a little bit different story with the cards. And this is also Marseille tarot. So it's the interpretations are slightly different. With some of the things, but anyway, we're gonna see what tarot has to say tonight. We have the Wheel of Fortune in reverse. My goodness, so the Wheel of Fortune is when things change, right? That the wheel is turning, but you know, and when it's in reverse, you know, sometimes there's a couple ways to look at this, and I might need another card, but it's either that. It seems like we're kind of in a holding pattern and we're waiting here, or like somebody's not realizing that change is about to occur, right? Because the change is going to happen one way or the other, whether you're on board or not, right? And it can, and it doesn't, you know, as the Sheryl Crow songs, change will do you good sometimes, right? So, all right. So let's see what other cards I get out of this. And because I think I need a little more context here. I usually do for the show. I do three cards. Okay. That one jumped off the deck. We have the Hanged Man, which is actually indicative of the pause that I talked about earlier, right? That's kind of interesting. So the Hanged Man is hanging upside down on something, right? He's got one foot in a stirrup that's hung up, and he's hanging upside down with his hands behind his back. Yeah. So it seems like this is what I would indicate, and maybe the next card will tell us, and I have a feeling that the next card will actually indicate this, it's about to be go time, right? There's a lot of buildup, and there's a lot of things that seem to be stuck and not, because you can kind of feel that it's maybe stuff's going to change, but you're not exactly sure when it's going to change. Okay. We have the six of coins here for the third card. And I feel like, you know, I'm going to read what this says here in the book here. We talk about abundance, right? And you know, you've got what you need, right? And you get that things are going to get really good, right? And I think that's really the way I kind of look at this. Yeah, the way I look at this is it seems like that, you know, it feels like there's a lot of shaking up going on, right? It feels like things are going to change, but it seems like we're still stuck, right? Things are still where they're at. Just hang out a little bit longer, you know, be patient like the Hanged Man. The Hanged Man has a very neutral, he has a relatively neutral look on his face, right? He doesn't look like he's really upset. He's kind of got acceptance of the situation. So anyway, this is what I've got for my tarot is that, yeah, it seems like change is definitely coming. Some people may not necessarily be wanting that change to occur. But when those changes occur, I think things are going to be better for everybody. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So, Anyway, I'll put this, I'll put a picture of the deck. Or this is, anyway, I'll put a picture of the, you know, read in the show notes, that kind of thing, all of that. You know, we'll do all of that. But, all right, I think it's time to weigh in. What do you think?
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321 and tell us, do you believe in aliens? Yeah, those little green men with the big black eyes, not the ones that ICE are rounding up. But if you didn't get in for the weigh-in segment, that's okay. You still have time because we have the last call. So call 253-237-3321 and tell us if you believe in aliens.
And before we do that, we'd like to play this brief commercial break.
Aliens. Every year at this time, the National Space Administration requires all aliens to register. Forms are available at your local post office. Those without forms must appear, however briefly, at the Bureau's astral offices on Nooker Street. Aliens, register now.
Thank you, Firesign Theater, for that great commercial. All right, so yeah, do you believe in aliens? All right, so let's start with text first, and so Mama T comes in. Do I believe in aliens? Considering some of my exes, you would think I would say yes. I'm not saying it's completely impossible, just not likely. If there were any, they would have come down here already, either to annihilate us or to try and help us. Well, you know, the funny thing is that just because you can't see them doesn't mean they're not there, right? Because there's a lot of shit we don't know, folks, or that we can't see in our, you know, third dimensional sort of a world, right? So if you're relying on your senses alone, yeah, you may not see stuff, but you know, and I could make the joke, you were married to an alien, my dad, Spock, remember him? Anyway, well, okay, maybe I should play a voicemail here. We got a weird voicemail right here.
Oh, Lotus Effect. This is for Phoenix and the phone boy. I just got the text for the question. Do you believe in aliens and not the ice kind? I mean, sure, why not? The problem I have with the whole discussion is this whole concept of coming from vast distances beyond the stars. It just doesn't seem to make any sense when you consider the anatomy of the race that we're most given images of, and that's the Greys. And they have super pale skin and really big eyes. And that indicates, as is the anatomy of other animals that live on the planet, that have pale skin and big eyes, generally live underground. So, there's just as many, if not more, instances of people seeing unidentified objects in the water or coming and going from the water. And if it's true that we allegedly know more about the surface of the earth than we do the bottom of the ocean, how do we know that these craft are not from a species that either lives way down under the water or inside the earth? You know, the deepest hole we've ever dug is 7 miles with the Kola super deep, but you know, so there's, I forget how thick the crust allegedly is, but it's way beyond 7 miles. So, I mean, what I'm getting at is there's a vast area where they could exist that does not require distances that you can't comprehend, but... yeah, anyway, that's about my 3 minutes. Yeah, I got 10 seconds left. So, yeah, I like the idea of aliens, but also, like, you know, what's the fucking point if they're not going to interact? Okay, bye.
Yeah. Okay, bye. Thank you, weirdo.
It was a great one. Now, what I can say about that is that I think there, I think the way that you would expect the thing, I don't know, like there's a lot of things I think most of us don't know about any of this, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert about any of this other than to say, if you realize that everything we've been told is probably a lie about this and many other topics, then you know you kind of have to throw your assumptions out the window. And so, but and I think the truth is going to become known very soon in a lot of these regards, right? I don't know. I don't have any inside knowledge, really. I just know that it seems like we've been kind of watching the mainstream media and you've been seeing that, you know, the aliens have been, you know, instead of it just being, you know, discarded as, you know, oh, that's a crackpot thing now, it's starting to come up again. And I think, and part of the reason for that, because again, as we learned during COVID, and if y'all weren't here during COVID, You would have realized that the narrative was, you know, if you tried to do ivermectin or, you know, I don't know, do the, any of the sort of, you know, that if you tried to, I don't know, didn't wear three masks when you went out for lunch or whatever, right?
Anything that went against the Gestapo's rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, oh, by the way, changed by the day, by the hour.
Yeah. And so when we get to the other end of it and we figure out, oh, yeah, they really were full of shit. You kind of go, well, okay, they lied about that, right?
What else did they lie about?
It's like, oh, they changed the narrative. And the bigger pattern here is that when the system is, you know, and you could even use the Epstein thing as an example, right? We all know that there's been weird people doing, things to other people that they should have been doing for a long time, right? I mean, we've all dealt with, you know, and Hollywood's been doing it, and you know, Epstein was just kind of the, you know, they all. You know, nobody wanted that list, released, and the mainstream was completely against it. Now,
because of all the people who are on it in prominent positions, Here's okay.
So,
I'm going to publicly put my head on the chopping block on this one. My personal opinion on the whole Epstein Island thing. Y'all have heard me, and at the time on Coffee and Chronic, which sadly is a defunct podcast now. Hempress Emily M and I, because she brought this person to my ethos, talked about a woman named Kathy O'Brien.
Yeah, we still have a bunch of clips from Kathy O'Brien.
We do. And I highly recommend going and getting both of the books that she has put out, Transformation of America, TRANCE Formation, and Access Denied for Reasons of National Security, or something to that effect. I've got to look up the actual name of it. Amazing book that chronicles truly all of the shit like happened on Epstein Island, except for there wasn't an island that it was happening on at the time. These women who basically were born into, or at least she was, you know, born into being, you know, abused in this way. They were, you know, they were offered to world leaders at the White House. You know, Gerald Ford pardoned her father for the incestuous crimes and the illicit child porn materials that he was he got caught distributing through the mail. And by the way, I'm not one of those people who's going to bend knee and not use those terms. So if you expect me to sugarcoat or soften those terms, you're looking at the wrong person, because I'm going to call a spade in this shit. So again, I think Epstein Island came as a result that it was too dangerous to have these presidential models, which is what essentially she was. It was too dangerous, I think. Because people were starting, I mean, Epstein Island's been a thing for a hot minute, even before it came to fruition that, oh, look at all these lists. But I think they figured out, hey, we need to put, you know, we need to do this on a place where there's no possibility of, you know, it being found, somebody seeing something, you know, ergo, what's the best way to hide it? Well, do it on a secluded island. So instead of just having these presidential models brought into the White House and wherever else to service these people, they just had an island that they went to. That's my theory on it. But
Whatever the case is, it's gross that's happening. But I think
it's abjectly gross that the rich and powerful and elite have a penchant for young girls that are under the age of consent. Some of them, they barely even know their own names. But this is a huge problem we have, and I'm angered by it. Because I feel like people don't give it enough attention. They don't understand the massive damage and psychological, trauma that doesn't go away once, God willing, these girls are released from their captivity or rescued. That shit takes years. Sometimes it never fully heals. And it is not something that anyone should ever go through. And I find it completely disgusting that people from countries that are not as well off as ours, like the Philippines and Thailand and shit like that, these children are, their families can't afford them, so they sell them. That's gross. I can't wrap my head around how in good conscience you can be aroused by looking at a child. Never ever have I. But we're off the subject.
We need to circle back about the aliens. But I think the point is that and I was trying to point out a larger pattern here. And by the way, I think that the thing is that when the truth becomes at some point, right? So they push a narrative, right? They push a narrative, and it becomes really obvious at a certain point that narrative is complete and utter bullshit. Now, I remember Gary Tubbs saying about the dietary guidelines, they can't come right out and say, well, we were all wrong for we probably killed so many people, but they can't really do that, right? So even if the evidence is there, you kind of have one of two choices. You either keep pushing it or you slowly back out of the room, which, by the way, they did with cholesterol. One of the things that came out was, they kind of removed some of the pushing for the cholesterol because they realized that actually cholesterol is not such a, it's one factor, but anyway, they have to acknowledge the truth. And what do? And in the meantime, they push back on any attempt to, learn anything about aliens or anything like that, right? We're talking about the pattern here. They don't want you to find out about something. They push you away hard, right? They don't let you find out. And then eventually they try to absorb any of the dissenters and stuff like that. And
so let me ask you a quick question, phone boy. Mm-hmm. Finish your thought, then I'll ask.
Yeah. So when it comes to this topic of aliens, right? Because I think at some point it's going to become really obvious to everybody that they exist, right? I don't know what that looks like, but at some point it's going to become really obvious that they exist, right? So the problem is that this is where you kind of have to pay attention, right? Is it really aliens, or is it the government or somebody using, the scare of aliens to, again, incite fear, right? So this is, I think so this is where you got to watch out for the false flags, right? I mean, given where a lot of us have spent our time, I think we all have enough discernment to figure out the false flags versus the real thing. So, and I think it's going to be, overall, it's when that happens, it's going to be a much more positive thing than we've been led to believe by Hollywood or anybody else for that matter. So that's just my opinion, man.
So my question is this, if you believe in aliens, do you think that Area 51, the reason they say it's because it's a military installation or whatever, but do you really believe that's the reason why it's so, shot on site, heavily guarded? Or do you think it is indeed because that is where they're keeping the most compelling evidence that aliens actually are here or do exist or whatever?
Probably all of the above. Here's the thing. I think all of that stuff's going to become knowledge at some point. And it's probably going to be sooner than we think. I don't have a time frame on it. I can't. But it just feels like with everything that's, you're kind of just watching the overall trajectory of, okay, now there's just things that people can't hide anymore. A lot of things that people can't hide anymore. And that's going to mean more and more things are going to come out. Now, if it all came out all at once, right. Again, talking about aliens, if they tried to do something right now, it wouldn't go well, right? We would panic, right? It's kind of, I'm thinking of the line in from Men in Black, right? Humans are just, you know, panicked creatures just like anybody else, right? Which is, yeah, when we pulling.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But we have more voicemails. You know, I should probably play those voicemails. Oh, looky, there's a Wookiee.
Hey, y'all. Yes, I do believe in aliens. I think there's another life form out there. And they're going to come over. They're going to probably come one day and take us all over. Love you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Who's to say that they haven't already tried to take us over?
I mean, truly, have you seen some of the top-ranking officials? Those fucking lizard people. Yeah. I swear to God.
Yeah. Again, it's They Live, folks. That's another one of those movies you should watch.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Roddy Piper.
All right. Let's see what this caller has to say about the topic of aliens.
Man, you guys are more strict than those bull after bull guys telling me how I have to define alien. Come on, man. Anyway, pretty much no. Yeah. I understand why. We go toward believing, but, and I'm a big fan of the X-Files. But yeah, I think my mind just kind of settles on no. But, I don't know. So, that's about it. Appreciate you guys. I love you guys. And, whether or not you're hanging out with family or you're, that would not be good if you're hanging your family. Hopefully you're just hanging with people you like, but you're not hanging people you like. So anyway, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And, yada, yada, yada. Give a hearty, hearty.
Oh my God. Thank you, Christopher Battleson.
I love that. Hanging your family. I'd like to hang my family at times by their toes. Yeah. But irrelevant. So we actually have a person who says no, they don't believe in little green men. That's kind of groovy.
Well, I think when the truth is exposed, again, it's not going to be what we think it is.
Although I have to point out why Google Voice is just so terrible. Yeah, we are more strict than those black guys instead of bull after bull guys.
Yes.
It picked up that we're more strict than those black guys. We are. We're absolutely more strict than those black guys over there at Bowl After Ball.
After, I also wrote down after the fine alien, which I figured was...
Yeah, after the fine alien.
That was good. Okay, we have one more. Okay, so I guess you and I... Well, okay, we can wait and do the last one, but I think you can probably tell where I stand based on how I'm answering some of these questions. We got one more voicemail.
Not only do I believe in it, share a little anecdote about when I was a girl. I was about 5 or so, and I'm in the backyard with my dad, and he's showing me these different, you know, the constellations and astrology and, you know, teaching me the different things like that. And I remember I suddenly got very, very quiet and very, very melancholy. And my dad noticed the change, and he says, you okay? What's wrong? And I said, I want to go home. And he kind of got confused. He's like, we are home. We're in the backyard. I said, no, I want to go home. And I pointed up at the sky. And my dad just kind of didn't really know what to do with that. And I just started going off about, yeah, if you go, You see that one when you just pointed at in the middle of Orion's belt, you go to that one and then you make a left from here and then you go. I mean, I was giving a detailed instruction, like the way you would tell somebody how to get to the fucking 7-Eleven, you know, when you see the McDonald's, turn left, go right at the Taco Bell, you know, I mean, I was giving directions like that, except with stars and planets. And I didn't know the term binary planet, so I binary star system rather. So I was like, you know, when you see the two stars together that are circling, then you go to the one on the left, and my planet is the one that looks like this. I mean, like I was dead serious, and I have no idea where it came from. It just came on real sudden, but I was really heartbroken, and just. I fell apart when my dad was like, we can't get you home. There's nobody who can get you home. We can't travel like that yet. So, you know, and I've met other people that are, you know, old souls. I think sometimes when you get the old souls versus NPC kind of thing, it's like the old souls are the aliens, dude. We don't belong here. We're just kind of, well, we do belong here because we choose to come back because we want to help the NPCs, but that's not always easy. It's, you know, red pill, blue pill kind of shit. I could go on forever, but anyway, yeah. So I am not of this world. Talk to you later. Bye. Yeah.
I knew it. I knew it all along that Dame Jennifer Weta was a fucking alien.
Yeah, well,
she's too bizarre to be anything but.
Well,
which is why we love her so much.
Yeah, well, Jen, I can relate. I mean, in this, I think I can say that. Yeah, this is, you know, when I'm sitting here reading your voice, man, I'm like, wow, yeah. I mean, because I think I've had that feeling myself at times where I just like, yeah, you know, I have always in my life like trying to find home, and it's not been here. So got to be somewhere else. Yeah. Anyway, so I think we'll get there. You know, I think there'll be, I think that's, you know, yeah, you talk about home. Yeah. Well, you know, that I think that's home for a lot more people than care to admit it to themselves or to anybody else. So, whether we've, you know, I think the close encounter might be with ourselves, folks. But anyway, yeah, thank you, Jen, for sharing that. That really, I wasn't expecting something like that, but I think, I have no reason to not believe her in that regard. So, honey, what do you think about all of this?
I don't know what to think. I'm not actually going to take a a strong position, yay or nay. I mean, I think it's possible. I've never personally met one, you know.
How do you know?
Well, exactly. That's kind of, you know, I mean, if we go along the lines of, you know, Dame Jen, then yeah, I have. But I don't know whether there are or whether they're not. I kind of am peaceful in just living my life with, if I find out the answer to that question, cool. If I don't, I'm also totally at peace with it.
Yeah, but if you think about how people so if you think about how people react to somebody that's other, right? And however you define that, right? And in the conflict and all of that, how do you think they would react to an alien? You know, that's a,
oh, they'd completely lose their fucking mind.
Yeah,
there is no way that if there was any degree of proof of being an alien that was revealed to someone, and it be, you know, the, like, I always say the little green men thing, because right, when you think about aliens, it's exactly how they're portrayed, is they've got these big black eyes, and, you know, they're either pallor or they're green or whatever.
Or they're Marvin the Martian.
Or they're Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, you know.
But, I mean, okay, on one hand, you've got people from all different places, this, that, and the other thing, that all describe these things, you know, these beings, you know, as being the same, you know, the way they look, this and that. You know, you've got stories of, and even, you know, to current day, there's unexplained lights that happen in our skies that can't be explained by military aircraft or something like that. I think it's completely possible. I'm just not committing one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
and I do agree. I think that if a person were to meet a bona fide alien, if they exist, there's a few different ways that this could go. If it's someone who's a total on board with aliens person, and there was a textbook alien that was introduced to this person, I think it would be either like a fandom kind of reaction, maybe a good reaction. But if you met somebody who thinks that aliens are coming to take us over, and an alien revealed themselves to that person, oh yeah, it's like a redneck on a fucking, you know, on a black person, like, you dead. I'm just gonna be real, okay? Like, some backwoods dipstick who thinks aliens are going to take over our planet, an alien revealing themselves to that dude, he going to beat that alien to death, and then he's going to take pictures, and he's going to charge admission to come see this decaying corpse. That's what I think.
Yeah, well, so I suspect that there's going to be, that before there's any contact made, there's some things in humanity, or at least most, a good chunk of humanity, are probably going to have to change a little bit.
I agree with you completely, because humanity is fucked right now.
Yeah.
If we don't change what we're doing.
Yeah, but that's why you and I and people that are within the sound of our voice, right, are making small changes and trying to do things that are improving the overall sort of the overall vibe, if you will, right? So that
we're trying to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time, right? At the same time, like, enough of us do it, and, you know, they tell two friends and they tell two friends and so on and so on. Before you know it, right, you know, I think it's gonna be like a tidal wave, right? It's so, you know, and with every, you know, I'm simultaneously just a little frightened about kind of what, you know, kind of where, you know, kind of what the short term future is going to be, because there's going to be because I suspect a lot of things are going to change in the near future, right? And it's kind of hard to predict the exact sequence and the exact timing and all of that. But I also see the other end of it, that it's, things are going to get better for everybody, right? And that's what I've always been about as a person, is like, how do I turn this world into something that's, you know, that people want to be in, right? That isn't so oppressive.
That is a task larger than you, sir.
Well, thankfully, I'm not the only one. I think that's the most important thing.
You can't go it alone, dude.
No, but we all have to do our part. I think that's the message there. I can't control what anybody else does, but I can do it. I can do what I can do. And I'm going to do what I can do. So.
And right now, what you can do is go on to the second half of our Health Rich program, which still is not
brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because they pay me every time I do. It's a really good way to make money.
Yeah, and I like money, though. So I think this is,
this is my story, actually.
This is your story. Yes, it is.
Because I get to tell you all about how some people keep razor-sharp minds into their 80s and beyond. And a new study reveals their secrets.
A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Neuroscientists have long struggled to understand whether the adult human brain spawns new nerve cells or neurons. The process, called neurogenesis, is crucial during development, and rodent research in the 60s hinted that the mature brain might undergo it as well. Mounting evidence since then has suggested that some animals, including rodents and non-human primates, experience adult neurogenesis. But humans have remained at the heart of a contentious debate. Now, a new analysis of 38 human brains supports the idea that adults do indeed birth neurons, and that replenishing these cells might help preserve certain cognitive functions. So in a study published February 25th in the journal Nature, adults age 80 and older with outstanding memories, dubbed superagers, had twice as many new neurons in their hippocampi, a brain region crucial for memory, as older adults with normal memory for their age, and 2.5 times as many as people with Alzheimer's disease. This shows the aging brain has the capacity to regenerate. That's huge, said study co-author Tamar Geffen, who is a medical individual. And we don't like recognizing these people. That's why we refer to them as such. However, superagers can recall everyday events and past personal experiences as easily as people decades younger in their 50s, but have IQ levels comparable to those of others their age. In the study, the researchers examined donated brains from members of this special group, as well as those from 4 other classes, older adults with no cognitive problems, older adults with mild or early dementia, older adults with Alzheimer's disease, and younger adults aged 20 to 40 with intact memory. The young brains helped Geffen and his colleagues find genetic markers of several types of baby neurons, which were subsequently identified in all the older adult brains. However, superagers had way more of these immature cells in their hippocampi than other elderly people, and even some of the younger adults. Well, that's not a surprise. Young people today are fucking stupid. But anyway, what's more, nerve cells called CA1 neurons and support cells called astrocytes seem to play important roles in superagers' extraordinary cognition, the researchers found. CA1 neurons help form, consolidate, and retrieve memories, while astrocytes help neurons build connections with one another, which allow them to communicate and seem to stabilize memories. Oh, I don't know. Could the diet have something to do with this as well? They didn't talk about that. I'm not even sure that they looked into that.
No, they probably didn't. But and I think because ultimately that's what it seems to me in my experience with this is, yeah, the people I can tell you that the people that seem to get impacted by this the most have the worst diets. Right. There's a reason it's called type 3 diabetes. Right. There's a reason it's called that. So. This is actually, as usual, they don't really, they say, oh, this, all this great things. Yeah. They're talking about the fact that, yes, it's possible if you take care of yourself. Yeah. I mean, I've known people like this. These are the people that fall off a cliff really fast and die, right? That live, they live their best life die at the age of 98,
Hey, if I make it to 98, I'm going to consider it pretty fucking good. I've had a real long run at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, this is... We get to go on to the next dietary trend. Oh my God. This is called boy kibble. God. The simple high protein meal trend that's going viral.
Kibbles and bits. Kibbles and bits. I'm gonna get me some kibbles and bits.
My God, that was a commercial from 1981, folks. I just want you to know that. Boy kibble is the latest viral meal trend that's taking over social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram. The trend has been described as the male counterpart to the 2023 girl dinner phenomenon, in which women shared casual snack-style meals of small portions of various foods. Boy kibble, on the other hand, is exactly what it sounds like. Much like kibble for pets, it's a basic no-frills meal that typically consists of ground beef and white rice.
Dude! This is not new. I used to eat that shit all the time growing up.
It doesn't sound like it'd be that bad either, honestly.
It's not.
No.
Put a little gravy with it. Shit's fire.
Yeah, you can probably do all kinds of stuff with that. Across social media, fitness influencers and gym-focused creators say the dish helps them easily hit their daily protein targets without spending much time cooking or money on takeout.
Yes, but God knows what it's doing to your body because of the grain.
Yeah, well, many claim they eat the meal several times a week, while some say it's part of their everyday routine. Now, unlike many viral social media diet trends, experts say boy kibble does have some benefits, especially when the recipe is modified. However, it can also pose some risks if the basic recipe is eaten too often. A female-gendered expert named House... the jokes write themselves.
Please tell me you're thinking of Hugh Laurie as hard as I am right now.
I was thinking of six levels of fatness.
Ah, okay, like you're as big as a house.
Yes, exactly.
And that could possibly be, that could be the case here. However, I love the fact, and I say that sardonically, a female gendered expert. Shut the fuck up.
You realize I wrote that, right?
Oh. Do you know how bad you sound?
Yeah, I know exactly how bad I sound. That's why I wrote it. So, anyway, this female gendered expert named House says there's a lot to like about the boy kibble. It's cheaper than eating out, easy to make and batch cook, and nutrient dense, especially if you add veggies, she said. Almost 50% of our calories come from highly processed foods, so I support any kind of home cooking, no matter how basic.
You're a fucking idiot.
As for its nutritional plus points, now ground beef is a complete protein. That it is, right?
Yes, and the reason I said she's a fucking idiot is because of the fact that, oh, I support any kind of home cooking, no matter how basic. Doesn't matter that it's full of carbs and seed oils and grain. You made it at home. You're a rock star.
So, Ground beef is a complete protein which helps maintain muscle, repair tissue, and build antibodies. 100-gram serving contains over 100% of our daily requirement for vitamin B12, which is kind of important. And it's only found in animal products. Well, it might also be found in plants that they've memory hold, but that's not covered here. So, beef contains other important minerals too, such as zinc, which supports immunity, and iron, which is necessary for hemoglobin and transports oxygen in our bodies. Now, how sad is that boy kibble doesn't have to be just for boys? Well, no shit.
With the fact nobody knows what fucking gender they are anymore. Are you a hole or a pole or a park bench?
Yes. It's important to note that not all rice is equal in nutrients. Well, they're all equal in carbs.
I was going to say, it's equally shitty.
White rice, which is refined, has had its fiber and protein stripped out. That means if it behaves like a simple carb in the body. However, other types of rice, such as brown rice, can offer greater nutritional value. The carbohydrates in rice complement ground beef as they provide the energy you need for workout and to replenish the energy that was used during your workout, some other expert said.
Bullshit. Guess what? Eat a fucking steak along with that ground beef, or eat more ground beef. Maybe just some veggies with that ground beef. Cut the rice the fuck out. Still gonna have plenty of replenish of your energy, etc.
Yeah, the two together may serve as a viable base for a post-workout or high-energy meal. Experts say the basic beef and rice boy kibble meal can easily be modified with a few simple additions to make it even healthier and more nutritionally balanced. Adding frozen mixed vegetables or broccoli doesn't add much prep time, but it boosts nutrition, says House. Or you could throw in a handful of bagged kale. God, or spinach. Ugh.
Okay, stop for just a moment. This bitch obviously knows jack and shit about cooking kale. The amount of time it takes to cook kale, this becomes not quick and easy.
And if you're eating it regularly, House suggests occasionally swapping rice for another carbohydrate. Yeah, of course. Now, subbing in the grain occasionally for potatoes, quinoa, or barley would boost your fiber intake. No!
And none of that is any less shitty.
And don't forget, some taste matters. I would like to see some spices such as garlic powder and cumin, or sauces such as salsa added. Not only will it make the meal far tastier, but spices also contain flavonoids and other healthy antioxidants, House said. And by the way, I do agree that you should season till the ancestors say whoa.
Okay, here's something I need to say, though. In all seriousness, I'm not going to say all hate aside, because fuck this bitch. Here's a problem, phone boy. You've never eaten rice and ground beef, a.k.a. this boy kibble stuff. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever eaten rice with nothing else? Just follow my... Yeah, mama says kale. I just threw up a little bit in house's mouth.
Yeah, the answer is I don't think
you've never just eaten plain rice.
No, not by itself.
Okay. Have you ever just eaten plain ground beef by itself? And I don't mean plain as in unseasoned. I mean with nothing else in it.
No.
Imagine, if you will, a dry-esque ingredient. Because you've eaten rice before.
Yes, of course I have. I used to
make it. So you know that it's dry, though. By itself, that's a dry...
Yeah, it is.
Ground beef, same thing. Not a lot of moisture.
Anyway, go on.
I'm telling you with absolute certitude, as I have eaten this, you need something to lubricate that, because that is drier than a bone to just eat rice and ground beef put together. I'm just saying, it makes me cringe, because you literally could choke to death on that. Do you understand that shit can lodge in your fucking esophagus?
Yeah.
I've had it happen. It's frightening when you're eating something and because it's so dry that it starts to choke you. And the first way that you realize it is you get a case of the hiccups. Yeah. And then you're trying so hard to swallow and you fucking can't. Now, if you have a liquid nearby, yeah, you might be able to get some liquid down, but I can assure you that sensation is not pleasant. But we're not going to talk anymore about how abjectly horrible this boy kibble is. We're going to talk about something abjectly more horrible, and that's ADHD, which may not be a disorder after all.
There's been some very interesting elimination diet studies with ADHD, putting children on what looks mostly like a whole foods diet. They threw in some margarine and some apple juice too, but just a few foods diet, and a little misguided. But these studies show remarkable results. They're flawed studies, but there are quite a few of them, and they all point in the same direction. And so why not try that? What would be the harm?
That is Dr. Georgia Ead talking about fixing ADHD in kids with changing their diets, which I think is kind of applicable here. Because Isaac's energy level, enthusiasm, and talkativeness were too much, at least for a traditional classroom. He had been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. One, psychologists explained that he had a high IQ, but low maturity. It wasn't until Heather Roden began homeschooling him in fifth grade that she realized what years of frustrated teachers couldn't put their finger on. What looked like a liability in one setting can flourish in another. Many professionals are moving away from treating ADHD purely as a disorder that 1 in 10 kids have. The word deficit in ADHD, they argue, obscures strengths such as creativity, hyperfocus, and cognitive flexibility that often accompany the condition. Different wiring isn't automatically bad, said some psychiatrist and founder of some bullshit named Dr. Daniel Amen. Brain-body clinics that use imaging instead of checklists for mental health issues, that's where you want to be at. Sometimes it's simply diversity in how people think and create. ADHD isn't a character flaw. It's a brain pattern. At the heart of the matter is finding where and how people with ADHD will thrive. While most research focuses on the deficits of ADHD, some studies suggest that many who have symptoms also have specific strengths. I think this is very true, Foamboy, because I would argue that you and I both have this particular condition, affliction.
Yeah.
I don't find it to be a handicap the fuck at all.
No, and actually my son actually got something close to I wouldn't call it a formal diagnosis, but basically he was part of a study that where they studied, well, Asperger's, which is basically on the ADHD spectrum.
Yeah, so. But that's autism, not ADHD, though.
Well, there's some relationship to that, but I mean the point is whether it's ADHD or autism or whatever, right? And that sort of hit home with me, right? But what I realized is that because we do things differently, that means we can see things differently, right?
And so, that's important because we break out of the mold that the government wants. We're not the cookie cutters. That's the problem. Yeah. That's why they want to medicate this away, because we're not the ones who sit silently with our hands folded in our lap and obey. We're the motherfuckers acting up. We're the ones acting out. We're the ones making a scene. Yeah. It's not always bad.
Yeah, we're also the ones staring at the stars and go, yeah, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I've learned to lean into it, right? It's like, well, this is how I am. Okay, fine. You know.
I don't like labels. Okay? Labels are for products, not humans. And I don't need a label on me. I'm me. Me is all the label you need to attach to me. So those with ADHD outperform others in divergent thinking, particularly in fluency, generating many ideas quickly, and flexibility, combining concepts in unexpected ways. Boy, that is so accurate. Now, this is according to findings reported in Frontiers in Psychiatry. A study published in Comprehensive Psychiatry found small to moderate positive correlations among ADHD traits of hyperfocus, sensory processing sensitivity, and cognitive flexibility, or the ability to rapidly switch tasks, behaviors, or perspectives. Hyperfocus is becoming absorbed in a task, sometimes to the point of losing track of time and surroundings, called flow in someone who doesn't have ADHD.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Uh-huh. I'm kicking the shit out of Foamboy under the desk here because I can't count how many times I've had that conversation with him about flow.
Yes.
And about getting lost in something and you pull your head up and realize it's been 3 fucking hours.
Yes. We do this
All the time.
Yes, exactly. And it's I think it's actually, that's the way that things are supposed to happen, is you're supposed to be in flow, right? It is actually, that's a good thing, but it does also require a certain amount of presence, right?
Because it definitely does.
Yeah. And I think there's nothing wrong with being in flow. Yeah. There's being in flow, but you also have to be present while you're in it because, anyway, but the point is that, yeah,
that's when it becomes easy, right? When you're in flow, and they don't want you to be in flow, folks.
100%.
Yeah.
Now, sensory processing sensitivity is typically thought of as a low sensory threshold. Being overwhelmed by stimulus such as light, sound, and smell. However, in the study, sensory processing sensitivity was defined differently. A sensory appreciation for aesthetics, nature, or architecture, for example.
Well, wait a minute, because why does...
Yeah, that's a whole diff... That's apples and friggin' oranges, yeah, right?
No,
there.
Shit. Not only that, it's like, do you not want people to see that? Oh, that's right, because if they actually looked at it and it invokes something in them, they might feel something. They might have an unapproved thought or feeling about something. Okay.
Here's a problem I have with that statement, though, my darling. Okay? Is that the low sensory threshold, which means being overwhelmed by stimulus like light, sound, and smell, okay, redefining it as a sensory appreciation for aesthetics, nature, or architecture? The fuck?
Yeah, no shit.
I appreciate architecture a lot. I appreciate nature. I can appreciate the aesthetics of a lot of things. Yeah. That does not equate to when you and I, because I know you go through this as well, mm-hmm. completely can't even because the sound is too much, a smell is too much, light at times can be too much. Two very different things. How can you sit there and say, oh, we decided that we were going to take this, which sounds really negative, and re-spin it into this thing that has nothing to do with the former?
Yeah, and the overstimulated, maybe because there's other that they're, you know, you're not getting all the senses, folks. We claim that there's five, but there's probably more. And we just don't know about them because they don't tell us about them. And, you know, and anytime we think that we have them, we're told we're fucking crazy.
Yeah, we're definitely discouraged from that because you're a freak. You're different. You're this. You're that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like being an empath.
Yeah, it's like being an empath. Yeah. Well, guess what? Revenge of the nerds, motherfuckers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So another study of adults with ADHD published in Frontiers in Psychiatry noted that impulsivity and hyperactivity are seen as positive by some people with an ADHD diagnosis. I absolutely agree with that. I love the impulsivity as long as it's controlled. And the hyperactivity, not as much. I don't necessarily think you and I are hyperactive.
I don't think so. I mean, it can happen sometimes, but it's not I don't know. Right. I think this is all bullshit anyway.
But I mean, I'm going to pick it apart because I fucking can. The impulsivity, as I was talking about before, the reason I like that is because I think we need a little more spontaneity in our lives, just in general.
Yeah,
as people.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think. I agree.
I think it's good for us.
Yeah, I think it's well. Yeah, and also, yeah, changing things up every now and again. Yeah, you get a, you know, if you look at nature, right? Think about basic biology, right? What happens in nature, right? When two things procreate, right? They create offspring. That offspring is different. It contains other things, and even if you look out in the field, right? There's thousands of flowers, and they're not all exactly the same. There's some little differences and stuff. Nature randomizes shit. That's part of what nature. That's part of the, you know, the function of that, right? If we're going in flow with the, you know, that with the you know, with the universe, things are sometimes a little random. And guess what? That's okay.
Yeah, but that scares people. They don't know how to handle that.
Yeah, they don't know how to handle it. Everything has to be predictable and consistent. Guess what? It's not, and you're better to not try to control it. You know, not try to, you know, I mean, anyway, that's getting deeper than we were planning to go here.
Yeah, we don't really need to get deep about that, but we will talk about how an analysis published in BMJ Open, adults with ADHD reported dual benefits in weakness traits. So a 30-year-old woman noted that being overly active allows her to do more than her peers in less time. Then I get to experience more. Another reported that her inattention has led to overhearing amusing conversations. I can agree with that. So traits such as impulsivity and hyperactivity can become strengths rather than liabilities by focusing on neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to form new neural connections, possibly even after injury and later in life. meditation, breathing exercises, physical activity, and learning new skills are all associated with improved neuroplasticity. Focusing only on deficits misses the point. The real goal is to help people build a better brain so they can access their strengths consistently. Especially when life demands concentration and follow through, which it often does. Life demands, however, may partially explain the prevalence of ADHD, which some argue may be more of an environmental problem than a brain disorder. Again, I don't consider it to be a brain disorder, me personally. So an article published in BJ Psych Advances notes that children of generations past were not expected to sit rigidly. Were not expected to sit rigidly and concentrate on academics for several hours a day. Really? What year, phone boy, pray tell, did Roosevelt decide that the public school system was a good fucking thing and we should do it, and that's why, to prepare the plebs to work jobs, we started 8 in the morning and we go until 2 in the afternoon? Because that's basically, more or less, if you shift things around, that's almost first shift in any factory.
Well, it was in the 30s, probably. I don't know. Whenever the
okay, so but that's enough of an answer for me. I'll accept that, because it says children of generations past. How many fucking generations? Because I can assure you, our generation, my children's generation, Tigger's generation, probably a generation before Tigger, I'm positive, because I know when Tigger was born, all of them were expected to sit rigidly and concentrate on academics for several hours a day. I want to know how far back these fools are going. Oh, children of past generations. You're full of shit, man.
Yeah, well, and you can see, it's like, we learned well before there were classrooms. Maybe the issue isn't the students.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, which is, I mean, yeah, I don't know if I'd read the rest of the article, but that's pretty much that. I think that's pretty much the end of the event.
Well,
right there.
I mean, I am. You know, basically, you know, the guy who talked about this is quoted as saying, "My feeling has been for a long time that we make ADHD into a disease state or abnormality that really runs along a continuum of in different directions." Now, this is according to a retired pediatric neurologist, Dr. Andrew Zimmerman. And what we tend to see as abnormal, because we want to see children sit still in class and do their schoolwork. Yeah. And that's true. They see it as abnormal. And I can actually speak to this, because my youngest son got in a lot of trouble. So my youngest son, who's a very intelligent person and probably one of the only children ever to be taken off of special education, if you can believe that, they decided that he was not special ed, and I fought like hell and had him removed from their clutches. But the whole thing was because, and I do this too, and I'm not sure, I think you and I have talked about the fact you possibly have done it, is when I'm concentrating and it's a self-soothing thing, is rocking back and forth.
Yeah, I do it sometimes.
Because he would do that, and it was disruptive to his second grade teacher, apparently. She had a little fucking dog clicker. Have you ever seen these things? They're annoying. They're very annoying. And when she would see him rocking, she would fucking click that clicker. One day, my youngest son had enough of the clicker, and he chucked a whiteboard at her, sent her to the hospital. I got a phone call. You know what my response was? I'd have fucking thrown the board at her too. Click a fucking dog clicker at me like I'm an animal. If it's disruptive, put him in the back of the fucking classroom. You don't sit there and call him out by clicking your little fucking clicker, Karen. Sorry. Triggered by the fact I have never settled with that people consider ADHD to be something negative. If anything, I think it's a fucking superpower.
For people who are seeking control, we are
uncontrollable. Astcos!
We are uncontrollable.
That is right. We are out of control. And we are also to the last call.
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
We actually have a story because this was a health story. It was one of these recalls here, which just the headline alone is worth it. The FDA announces bottled water recall because more than 500,000 gallons packaged under unsanitary conditions. Give me some water. Now, we actually had a debate about the word insanitary. Is it a real word? Yeah, it's a real word according to the dictionaries of the world, right? So
yeah, because anytime you usually hear it, it's unsanitary.
Yeah. So it's interesting. By the way, I've seen the in prefix on words that I would normally expect to see on more than once in this.
That's fair.
Yeah. So recently, it's not something I've seen and I've been reading, writing shit for decades. And yeah, so it's weird that it's kind of come back up again, or it seems to be coming up. Even it's valid. Anyway, more than 650,000 plastic water bottles have been recalled in two states, according to the Food and Drug Administration. Valley Springs Artisan Gold LLC initially recalled the products on February 6th because the water was bottled under unsanitary conditions. On February 26th, the FDA gave the recall the second highest risk level, class 2, meaning the risk of severe health effects is low, but there's a possibility of temporary or reversible consequences. I don't know where these bottles of water were sold, blah, blah, blah. If you really care, you can read it in the show notes, but they can't even bottle water without fucking poisoning us.
Well, I mean, between the plastics that the water's in and now the conditions in which it's being bottled.
Yeah, exactly. Well, oh my God. You know, that I think we got past 2 hours here, so
we did.
I think we're about done.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it, I gotta go.
Yeah, we gotta go, man. It's been great hanging out with y'all. We're gonna do music in Studio 33, but with all of that,
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back, swoosh, and that's the game.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.